the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida. It's the Annie Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 24th, 2011, and you're listening to the best poker cast on the internet. I'm Christopher Cosenza.
Happy birthday.
Don't say it, dude. You can't say that on the show. We're going to have to pay a bunch of money.
Oh, I was just quoting Marilyn Monroe there, so she has to pay the money. I'm Scott Long, and our birthday at the PokerCast passed quietly last week, Chris.
It did indeed. We're a little busy on our end these days to be keeping track of our own landmarks and own milestones, but hard to believe. Even when I say it to people, I can't believe. I'm like, really? Is it 2005? Well, yeah, I guess it is. And then, geez, haven't missed a week in 6 years.
Since June 15th, 2005, 6 years old. There's a lot of kids that are younger than us.
It's pretty incredible, man. And is it a birthday or is it an anniversary? That's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, anniversary could be
two of us, so
reunion,
anniversary, yeah.
But the show itself was bored. You know, I never really know.
Birthdays are more fun than anniversaries.
I already have enough trouble saying that you're my partner when I'm talking to people. And if I start saying we're celebrating anniversaries together,
I don't know if there's anything wrong with that.
No. But I just don't want to have to clarify every time I talk about our show or you. So, let's just say it is a birthday.
All right, we'll go with a birthday anniversary. Anniversary of our birthday.
There you go.
But hey, thanks for everyone that's been listening. Particularly all those of you who listened from the very first show, and somehow, despite the laws of logic, have stuck with us for 6 years.
Yeah, so I guess that means we're pretty close to 300 shows then. Oh, we are.
I was trying to do the math. You know, we hit our 500 show, which I imagine would have to be, what, probably a 4-day uninterrupted Bonnaroo festival kind of thing. Got a couple of years to plan that, but
we're close, though. We're getting close. I mean, that's, 52 a year, that's 300 shows, so it's pretty crazy.
Yep. Well, we'll keep on plugging away, and of course, part of the fun of this is that we get to go on the road.
I guess it's part of the fun. On all your perspective, I guess, depends.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that you don't really like to leave your hobbit hole there. I drag you out on special occasions, show the world that you do exist.
Was that a Lord of the Rings reference? I thought you weren't into like stuff like that.
Oh, I read The Hobbit when I was a kid, I was like a kid, Now I'm 39 years old, so.
Man, I can't believe it.
But we're off to Vegas, baby.
Yeah, we're off to Vegas, and you're going before me, and then you'll be picking me up at the airport. So I'm pretty excited. I don't have to, hail a cab, or I get to make you pick me up for once.
Of course, that's assuming I get there on time, because I'm hitting Reno on Saturday, then flying to Vegas on Sunday, driving to Laughlin on Sunday, and driving back first thing from Laughlin on Monday morning to pick you up.
Yeah, and please, whatever you do, read the itinerary so you know when I'm landing. So I'm not sitting there in the 117 degree weather of the parking garage at McCarran Airport waiting for you to pick me up, and you're like, oh, I thought it was 10. And I'm like, no, it's 8:30, Scott. Please be here.
Oh, I thought you were more worried that I might miss one of the flights and not be there to pick you up at all. But no, it's all about you.
No, of course it's all about me, because, I'm the one that's going to be standing out there sweating, and you're going to be the one driving around in a rental car with air conditioning. So make sure you get it right, okay? You can get it right for the other stuff, too, but as long as you're in Vegas picking me up, I don't care if you get the other stuff wrong. So it doesn't cost me any money or time.
Yeah, I could do a whole Hangover 3 thing for the Saturday and Sunday as long as I show up for the wedding on Monday morning.
That's right.
Show up. All right, I got you.
All right, don't be bringing up wedding.
Don't forget our Annie Up meetup at 8 p.m. Friday, July 1st at the Palms, our $70 mini tournament, followed by cash games. And Chris got an email this week from our good friend at Jason from J Design Playing Cards.
Yep, he said he might be there. I guess he's going to be in town, and he might stop by.
Might stop by, and if he does show up, he says that he'll be packing some nice swag for folks.
I wonder what those are going to be.
I don't know. I think the rumor is out there that they might be some of those choice, very sweet, uncut sheets of his playing cards that was the probably the most desired swag ever in the history of the 6 years of the Andy Poker Cast.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
So no guarantees, but in case you guys were like, I kind of like Scott, I kind of like Chris, I might go. Now Jason from Digi Design is coming. Wife, I got to go. Sorry.
Yep.
I'm booking my ticket now. I got to see that Jason guy, man. He makes those awesome cards. Now you've got the incentive to come.
You know, plus taking our money. I mean, how sweet is that, taking money from us? You know,
that's true.
It's got to be some of the greatest things that our listeners can ever look forward to. I mean, the guys at New Jersey were actually drooling at the table. We had to keep calling the waitress over with napkins.
Yeah, they all left pretty happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we should probably let people know not to rush to their iPod on Thursday or Friday. Because
right.
We'll be taping next week's show after we get back from Vegas. We're getting back very late on Saturday. Very, very late. So I don't know when we're going to get to it. But don't worry, the streak will be intact. It'll just be a little late. But I think we could probably promise folks that it'll be a show worth waiting for, right?
I think so. And the other thing, too, is one of the last times that you and I were in Vegas together, we actually had the recorder with us, and we did the show there.
Mm-hmm.
So if we find some time somehow to do the show there, maybe we'll do that, and I'll try to edit it quick and post it when I get home on that Saturday, or at least that next Sunday morning. But who knows? Who knows when we're going to have time to do it? We'll see. Maybe. You never know. We're going to be so busy out there, we'll never know. But if we find some time, you know, maybe I can wake Scott up, you know, 2 in the morning and get him to ramble on for an hour or so, and then you know, record that and use that. Because it's not the quality of the audio they care about, right? It's just you're whining and
jokes. Of course
not.
No one ever complains about the quality of the audio.
We never have anybody saying that Chris sounds like he's talking into a soup can or, you know, or Scott sounds like he's miles away or, you know, so.
Well, you mentioned how busy we would be. And I was thinking about this last night, and I was telling our good friends on the Poker Wars show on Monday night that we were headed out there and trying to hit as many of the Vegas rumors as possible. And Frank Greentree, who was sitting in for the wonderful Antonio Panzari, just thought this was amazing. And every caller he came in, he asked them to give us odds on whether we can do what I said we were going to do.
Yeah.
And so then I sat and thought about it a little bit more, and I'm like, you know what? Here is an opportunity for a prop bet of sorts that our listeners can follow along with, and two people can profit handsomely from.
I know where this is going.
And I know when you love when I get crazy with this stuff, so I can see your eyes rolling already. But this is what I'm going to put out there, all right? There are 84 poker rooms in Nevada. Chris asked me how I know that.
How do you know that, Scott?
Because I spent all day yesterday updating our website, our great Where to Play page on our website with links to every single one of them.
Jeez.
And building a map of Nevada poker rooms in Google Maps that's also part of that website. You would think that would go quickly, but 84 poker rooms slows the process down considerably.
Man, that's a lot of rooms. There's like 58 in Vegas alone, so that's crazy.
58 in Vegas, and then what's that mean? A little less than 30 scattered throughout Laughlin, Reno, other parts of Nevada. So here's the thing. 84 poker rooms in Nevada. I am going to Reno for 22 hours, Chris.
Uh-huh.
All right? I will be in Laughlin for roughly 18 hours, assuming I don't misread your itinerary and get to the airport late. Together, we will be in Vegas for a total of 125 hours. So that is roughly, 165 hours
right.
of time on the ground in Nevada. I want to know from our listeners how many of those 84 poker rooms in Nevada we can hit in 160-some hours.
Man. Now, a few of them we can't even get to, though, right? So...
Yeah, I guess just saying, full disclosure, I figure there's probably 13 to 14 that are just geographic impossibilities. I mean, we're not going to drive all the way to Utah border to hit those couple
right.
as much as we'd like to. So really, we're working from an effective possible number of 70.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
So here's the deal, and these are we're just visiting these, all right? We're not playing in them. We're not playing a hand in each, although that would be really fun. We are, obviously we're not just walking in to walk out. This is not like, you know, one of those amazing race episodes where we show up in the beautiful countryside and a nice little local elder there with history, and we just snatch the envelope out of his hand, rip it open, and litter the ground, and then run off. All right? We're actually showing up and actually hopefully talking to the managers in these rooms or shift bosses. Get to know a little bit about the room so we can report on them intelligently in a future issue, right?
Right.
So I'm going to kind of guess that if we do it right, we're looking at probably 30 minutes per stop.
Yeah, maybe.
Roughly, right?
Yeah, about that.
And that doesn't count the travel. Obviously, there's a lot of travel involved here.
Right. And lunches.
We're probably going to have to eat every once in a while. Might sleep for a couple hours. We got the meet up on Friday. You know, the various other things you got to do.
Got to play. We got to play, too. We're out in Vegas. We're going to play a couple times.
All right. So we'll factor all that in. And here's what we're going to do. The person who guesses correctly the number of rooms that we actually are able to hit will win a swag box from our Annie Up sponsors. And I'm not talking about just an item here. I'm going to put together a box. It won't be as cool as the box that we sent the troops in Afghanistan, which, by the way, they sent us back a shirt from their unit and a car protector.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff. You'll be happy when I give you yours tomorrow, but very nice. But it will be a swag box. And here's the thing. We're going to have two winners because this is going to be a contest that's going to play out exclusively on Facebook and Twitter.
Cool.
All right. You know,
no emails, no nothing, just strictly right. Facebook and yeah.
I mean, you can email, but boom, delete.
Delete. Don't count.
Delete. You can get on the forum. Sir, by all means, get on the forum and chat about it, talk about how crazy we might be, who's right or wrong. But the official entrance will be on Facebook and Twitter. I will start a post on Facebook on our page at Facebook/Annie Up Magazine. All the posts there will be the official ones. On Twitter, we are going to hashtag them with the #AntiUpNevada. So you can put your vote in at #AntiUpNevada. What you want to do is guess the number of rooms that we're going to make out of those 70 or so that we think we can hit. And then the tiebreaker will be how many of the rooms that we actually get to play in.
Wow, that's... Jeez.
And here's the thing. We're going to have one winner on each platform. So our listeners and readers can decide whether they want to hedge their bets. Put one number on Twitter, one number on Facebook, so maybe they have a better shot of winning one. Or if they're confident, and we know most of our listeners are pretty confident, you can put the same number on both and win both boxes of swag.
Oh, man. Well, that certainly seems like it's going to happen. Someone's going to win both boxes, I think, because they're not going to put it on both.
Obviously, the first tiebreaker is rooms that we played in. The second tiebreaker will be the first one to pick that number.
Yeah.
So it's possible, unless you got one of those smartphones that can tweet and Facebook at the same time, that somebody might pip you.
Yeah, yeah.
One with the same number, so we'll see. It'll be fun. And, you know, we're going to kind of treat this a little amazing racist style here. We're going to tweet our progress as we go through Vegas.
Right.
So every time we hit a room, we'll tweet, hey, here we are at Alianta Station. Here we are at Caesars. So you can keep track at home so there's no funny business when we get home and we, I think it was 60. You'll be able to count. And then we'll do a daily summary on Facebook. I'm not going to update that Facebook page every time we're at it.
Yeah, no.
That's why there's Twitter.
That's why there's Twitter.
Twitter's for the short attention span. Facebook's for the people that can wait a day, like me.
I can't wait to tweet that, wow, the toilet stalls at Caesars are humongous. No toilet paper in stall 5 at the Venetian.
Hey, you laugh about that, but you know, I did a story. You probably remember this for TBT. I did a story on Vegas on $30 a day.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was impressed by were the bathrooms, the loos, as you would say in England.
Yeah.
At the Bellagio, those are places that you can nap a couple hours away if you have to.
I'm still waiting for the bathroom attendant to be in one of these rooms when I walk in because I have some questions.
Got some questions for the bathroom attendant?
I have some questions for the bathroom attendant. I'm just waiting to find one before I go in, and I'm going to have my recorder with me, too. So if there's an attendant somewhere, I'm going
to
have some questions.
What I find odd about this is that most of the free world does what they can to avoid bathroom attendants.
I know.
And you are actively seeking one out.
I know. I can't wait. I can't wait to try to talk to one. Hey, man, what's going on? Can we do an interview for the Annie Up podcast? I got to talk to you.
I can't tell you how many times I went into restaurants, and I don't frequent the type of restaurants where there should be bathroom attendants, mind you. that I go into these sports bar-ish kind of things, and there's little Johnny there ready to hand me a towel and give me a squirt of mouthwash, and I have to be the unhygienic Scott and sneak out without, because not that I'm cheap and don't want to tip them, but, you know, hey, I can wash my own hands, right? I've been doing it since I was a kid. I don't need some other guy to do it for me and then demand a buck from me.
That's what I want to ask him, though. I'm going to be like, what poker players have you recognized come in here and not wash their hands? Because I want to make sure that I avoid your table
chips.
Probably
going to be a lot. Poker players and dits, man. They're not going to tip that guy. but I want to assure everybody, when I do that, when I successfully dodge them, I go out and ask the waitress for a wet nap or something. So I keep the hygiene up. I'm not trying to, you know, cause a new Ebola virus or anything because it's too cheap to give the guy a dollar. But trust me, if I'm going to a place where I'm spending $60 on a steak and $200 on a bottle of wine, you know, because someone's buying, because I would never do that myself,
right?
I expect that there'll be a bathroom attendant. But when I go to Joe's family sports bar where I'm paying $6 for a hamburger, there should not be a guy in there giving me mints.
And this concludes Chris Cassenda's Random Thought of the Week. So you're back from Oklahoma.
Yes. So we've been busy traveling. Obviously, we just got back from Atlantic City, and then I actually head out to Oklahoma last week. And it's almost a misnomer to say Oklahoma, Chris.
Uh-huh.
Because I literally was like four steps into Oklahoma. I was really in Missouri and Kansas. In fact, actually, I went out. We had a business meeting out at the beautiful Downstream Resort right across the border from Missouri. In fact, actually on the property, Chris, there is a marker. You can stand there, and your blubber like mine can fold over three states at the same time.
Wow.
Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri.
Wow.
Standing all of them at the same time, and you're a pretty short drive from Arkansas, too, so you can actually hit four states pretty quickly.
Wow.
So I say Oklahoma just because, I don't know, Oklahoma sounds more fun. Sounds more Wild West than Missouri or Kansas.
And it's official. I mean, you're officially in there when you're in the meeting, right? So
that's
official.
True. But I had fun out there, and, we had so much fun at the meetup in Atlantic City. I envisioned that we're going to have a great time at the Vegas meetup. And I had my own little mini meetup there, Chris, a longtime listener. He's with us from the beginning, Jerry. I think he goes by Loser64. You know, the problem with all these people is everybody has a different handle on Full Tilt and Stars and on the forum and everything else. So I feel like I have five times more friends than I really do. They're all the same people. But Jerry's been great. I've been Skyping with him for a while. Told him I was headed out there, and he's like, hey, I live in Bentonville, Arkansas, and it's not very far from me to drive over. I'll drive over and say hi to you. And I'm like, hey, that's great. So he drove over, and of course he gets there even before I did. I had dinner plans with the poker room manager, so we played for a while, and dinner went longer. And he's texting me, hey, man, sorry I missed you. I got to leave. I got to get to work at 6. He's texting me as I'm walking back into the casino. I'm passing him. Hey, Jerry, how you doing, buddy? I'm like, hey, come on. You got time for one beer, right? And he's like, oh, sure. I always have time for a beer. Like, great. So I bought him a beer, had a great time, sat there, talked to him. The poker room manager there Downstream, great guy, Elliot Schechter, had a wonderful visit with him, and he actually joined us for a beer. And, the Atlantic City meetup, Chris, we anointed Dan, the new CEO of AnyUp.
Right.
For that beautiful customer service he did with a woman who confused him for one of us.
Right.
I am going to make Jerry our de facto new marketing director. because we're sitting there talking with Elliot, and then he mentions the poker cast, Elliot. I hadn't had a chance to really bring that up. Obviously, Elliot, it was about the magazine and our TV and all that kind of stuff we do. Hadn't mentioned the poker cast, and Jerry did an amazing sales job on the poker. He wasn't even trying to. I think he was just excited to talk about it. And was telling him about how he has a half a dozen or more friends all around the country who he's never met.
Yeah.
And it's all part of the poker cast.
Yeah.
And, I thought that was amazing. And I know that had a big effect on Elliot as well, too. It was just a good reminder of, the community that we've helped build here and people contribute to every day. And really nice.
Yeah, that's always one of the things that I'm most proud of is that the people are friends now because of us. You know, they're... whether it's on the forum or just through the show or meetups and stuff, they're all just, they're poker players have a common thread, and it's our show, and I like that. It's really cool. It's kind of a community that we built.
Well, I mentioned that our business was at Downstream, a great resort. But Thursday night, Kirk Fowler, our TV producer, was in town for this meeting. And he's like, you know what, I want to play a tournament. And I'm like, okay. Downstream had great cash games going, but didn't have a tournament that night. So we drove to the next closest casino, Border Town.
Right.
Seneca, Missouri. Right in between, or right on the border, obviously. It's a very convenient name. It'd be a terrible name if it was in the middle of the state. Border Town. And so we get there, a $60 weekly tournament. It's actually a really good $60 tournament. I mean, there's probably no great $60 tournaments out there, but I think it was 20-minute levels, and you had decent chips to start with. Well, we get there about a half an hour early. We blew our free slot play for signing up for the Players Club. And Kirk went off to get some food. I'm like, I got a half an hour play. I'm going to hit the casino because all the cash games were full. I was amazed to find, Chris, a three-card poker for $2. $2, a special Better Off Dead version.
What my $2?
Now, you know, three-card poker is the game that I play with the wife because, you know, the strategy's easy. You know, if you get queen 6-4, you stay. If not, you don't. You don't play the pair plus. You just play the ante. You learn to fight with the people where they say, why don't you play the pair plus? And you're going to say, well, my husband owns a poker magazine and writes a gambling column. He knows the odds. And then they get mad and they don't understand. But other than that, it's a great game for us to play together, right? So I'm like, all right, I'll play for a half an hour for $2. You know what? I felt like I was Donald Trump. So I defied the odds and played the pair plus bet.
Oh, my God.
So all this advice I've been given over the years, I decided to throw it out because it was only $2. I was going to be there half an hour, right?
Yeah.
Guess what? I hit like three flushes, three straights, and then the Holy Grail, the Ace of Diamonds, King of Diamonds, Queen of Diamonds, the Mini Royal. Of course, they don't pay a Mini Royal there. But still, I got paid off with a straight flush. Had I been playing the way you're supposed to play, I would have got $5 for that hand.
And what'd you get instead?
About 100.
Wow.
80, somewhere in 80.
Wow.
Whatever it was enough that I ended up free rolling in the tournament, plus the money I lost in three card poker, because you always got to lose three card poker.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Pretty cool.
And then, so Kirk and I got to play the tournament. We both, ironically, won out on pocket queens, different hands, and both on suck outs.
I would beg to differ that it was ironic, but we can move on.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks a lot. But the funny thing is we sat down at the tournament. And we were both at the same table. And there was a guy in the three seat. And we were like the only two outsiders, man. We were like Beavis and Butthead here in Locals City. And the guy in the three seat was sat down. Another guy comes up and is like, hey, I've got seat 3-2. And, of course, the dude was like, oh, boy. And they had they got the Genesis Bravo there. They got the computer-generated little thing. So it's not like somebody give two seat cards or something, right?
Right.
Very odd that this could happen, right? So then they're like, hey, are you at the right table? Yeah, I'm at the right table. You got the right seat? Yeah, I'm sure the right seat. They both insist on it. They both put their tickets down. They look at them. Yep, they're the same. And then the dealer's like, whoa, wait a minute. The guy was already sitting down there. This is for last week's tournament.
The guy had it in his wallet or something.
So he's like, oh, sorry. So he pulls his wallet out. He's got one of these George Costanza wallets that looks a lot like mine.
Yeah.
Opens it up, and literally, Chris, like 10 tournament receipts fell out. It's like he was just keeping them as mementos, and he just picked the wrong one out. So he actually had a real one for the night, and he just picked the wrong one out.
Oh, jeez.
Have you ever seen that happen?
No, I've never seen that happen. I mean, who keeps those things, man? Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
And then he happens to get the exact same table and the exact same seat. Even that is hard to believe. You know,
well, I don't
10
think
random
it was
tournaments.
Same. I mean, it was just, you know, he just happened to pick the seat that somebody else had. I mean, whichever ticket he would have pulled out, the same situation would have happened.
Oh, yeah, because he just pulls one out and goes there, yeah.
Yeah.
That's just pretty funny, though.
We just got lucky because we had the front row seat for it. After the game, so of course we got knocked out, and so we got into the 1-2 no limit game that they went. You know, one of the things I like playing with Kirk is he just likes to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, obviously he's there to win and win money, but we were just having fun. The 1-2 game was very friendly. There wasn't a lot of aggressive play going on. So we were just enjoying enjoying my beer and stuff. And he actually, I did not think he was going to be able to do this because we had a lot of regulars, a lot of folks that are a little older and not being any kind of Jerry-ist Jerry, I don't know what the word is for being an ageist, but you know they tend to not want to play our reindeer games with the kids.
Right.
I don't know how he was able to do this, but at one point he suggested, "Hey guys, let's all go in blind $2 pre-flop." And I started laughing because I'm like, "There's no way this is going to happen." Immediately, two people did it, and then it was like dominoes falling.
Wow!
The entire table put $2 in blind.
Wow!
And we're laughing about it. It was the most fun I had in forever. All right. And here's the best part, though. The cards are dealt. The dealer goes under the gun, and he's like, "Okay, call." All the way around, he's like, I guess the only person that has an option is the big blind." I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Everybody called, so the only person that had an option was the big blind. So, of course, he was smug and raised. Each bank. So everybody folded, got around to me, and I didn't even look, obviously, because I couldn't do anything. I had a call. I looked at Ace King, re-raised him, ended up winning the pot, and so I profited quite generously off of Kirk's craziness.
Collusion!
And the final thing, too, the one thing I noticed at Border Town, they had their cards had the peekers on them.
Oh, yeah, those are, I remember those from the World Series.
Oh, they have them in the World Series?
Yeah, they had, you know, you're talking about the little corners of the cards already had the...
The
World Series.
The big old people-sized cards, you know, which I hate because you got to bend them up really hard, high, to see what they are. And I'm not very good at protecting my hand anyhow. But, yeah, so they had the little tiny peekers on the top. So yeah. I could just, like, bing!
Yeah.
Oh, pocket aces.
Oh, Ace King, I'm going to raise this blind pot.
Pretty wild.
Yeah, yeah, they had him at the series. It was a couple of years ago, and then they got rid of him.
Okay. I thought that was unique, but apparently it's not, so moving on. But in the final mode, too, Elliot, the great poker manager there, drove me around. The casino is right next to Joplin, Missouri. And
right.
Watching TV and reading the papers, they saw the devastating tornado. I would say it's a tornado, but it sounded like, from what he was describing, it was actually four tornadoes that all fused together.
Oh, my God.
I think it was more than 160 people lost their lives.
Jeez.
He drove me around the damage. And I got to tell you, I mean, we live here in Florida. I've seen hurricane damage and stuff. But, wow, talk about just forgetting about your problems for an hour. It was truly amazing to see it in person. I mean, you're driving down a road, and there's a house just obliterated on the ground, nothing. Man. And a house next to it, still standing, dog running around in the front yard, people outside hanging out. And you stop and think, you know, for a minute, wow, you know, what if that guy could have bought either house when he was buying the house, and he chose that one, and now he's fine, and the guy in the other house has no house and may not even be there anymore. It was really weird. And just to kind of drive home how weird this was, too, he had obviously seen much of the tornado damage. Amazingly, the casino employs 600 people that live in Joplin. Not one of them lost their lives.
Wow.
A couple of them lost relatives, and certainly some of them lost their houses, but no one lost their lives. Amazing. But he had driven around some of it, but he didn't drive around to one thing. People probably heard on the news, entire Walmart was gone. You can imagine how big that is, right?
Yeah.
So we drove up, and it was just a vacant lot. I can't even imagine. I mean, I drive by our Super Walmart town, just thinking how huge that is, and just the whole thing gone.
Man.
Not even a structure hanging, just flat.
So sad.
And the weird thing is, there was like, you know, brick buildings obviously are built a little stronger, so there's some rubble and stuff around there. But we're driving up, and there's neon lights at what looks like a restaurant, and we're turning a corner, and he's like, "Oh my gosh, is that Shakey's? Shakey's has the best frozen custard in the universe." Are they open? And we pulled up. This crisp was literally half a block from the Walmart. Everything around it, including the Walmart, completely obliterated, down to the ground. This place didn't look like it was touched.
God.
And if it had been touched, they fixed it right away. It's just amazing to me how this stuff happens.
Yeah, that's just the thing about the narrowness of a tornado, how it can just weave in between things and take things out and still leave other stuff intact. It's just remarkable.
Absolutely crazy.
So
and
sad.
Very sad, yeah. And, you know, it's weird. I mean, not that I'm one of these big macho John Wayne men, but, you know, I was tearing up during this. And it's weird. I'm meeting this guy for the first time, and you're on these business meetings, and the last thing you want to do in a business meeting is cry.
Yeah, or get emotional, yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, you know, kind of hiding my eyes and stuff, and which is kind of silly. I mean, it's not like anybody could drive through there and not get emotional about it. But
yeah.
But really, you know, if folks still have a little money in their charity budget out there, you know, send some folks some of it to folks in Joplin, because it was a lot worse than it looked like on TV.
Okay, well, let's move on to some happier news here.
Let's get happy.
We got a mailbag from Greg, and he's in Newfoundland, Canada.
Newfoundland?
Newfoundland, yeah. What do you think it is? Newfoundland?
No, it's Newfoundland. That I know. It's
Newfoundland.
It is not.
Yes, it is.
Newfoundland. I got to say it quickly. These Canadians, they don't like to waste time.
I like Newfoundland. It's a lot easier to say.
Yeah, we'll see how fun it is there. how new that fun is.
He says, you guys got me back into poker. After my first kid was born, I pretty much gave it up, but one day I got a new phone and decided to see what it could do. I downloaded a few podcasts and somehow stumbled upon yours and have been a dedicated listener ever since. I started playing poker again in my free time and love it. It's my time, he says.
Yes.
Just wanted to know you're appreciated in the times when I start lolling at you to... Well, I am. What is it? Lolling?
LOLing. Come on.
Oh, okay. I have no idea. So, in other words, when he starts laughing out loud at the two of us while he's doing the dishes with his earbuds in, are great. His wife just rolls her eyes at me, and she knows what he's listening to. Man, thanks. Appreciate it. And love knowing that we're getting people back in the poker, too. That's another good thing.
Excellent. Yes. A little pat on the back. That's always nice. Keeps us going.
LOLing. There should have been a hyphen in there or something.
All right, well, Greg, we appreciate you emailing that. Everybody else, email your mailbag to podcast@anteupmagazine.com, and we'll send you something great. Like, we're going to send Greg a deck of those J Design playing cards. They're the official playing cards of Anteup, now available in the Anteup store at www.anteupstore.com. Remember, Jason might show up at the meetup. And these cards, we love these cards a lot.
Right.
But one of the things I think they're so cool is that even curmudgeons can't find anything about them to complain about. They're that cool. Even the curmudgeons don't complain.
Oh, man. Well played. Well played. I'm sure some people are happy about that now. okay, well, our hotline is 813-448-1120. If we're not saying it clear enough, let me say it again. It's 813-448-1120. The reason I said it twice is because no one called us this week, or at least no one called that was worth putting on the show. So if you did call, you may have gotten something cool like a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. So remember... 813-448-1120. Come on, we have like thousands and thousands and thousands of fans out there. One of them needs to call us.
Yeah, we're just going to have to throw this unclaimed swag into the swag boxes for a contest.
Yeah, hey.
Hey,
all right, so stop calling us then. We'll keep filling up our swag boxes then.
Yeah, don't let people get greedy here. I mean, there's enough to go around. All right, I always love the feedback portion. AZ Slick, frequent contributor, wrote it. That very awesome show on poker players on currency.
Yeah.
Great little random idea you had that we turned into something of a complete 4 hours of time wasted.
Yeah.
So here's the show, and he wrote in and said, interesting discussion on poker player currency. The one thing that was disappointing was the consideration of Phil Hellmuth for any bill. We knew that was going to be controversial. You know, some people don't want Phil on the bill. Some people put him on there because it's 50 and they wanted to stick him with bad luck, right?
Yeah.
So he was disappointed by it. Here's why, Chris. As you know, his head is so big it wouldn't fit on a bill.
He'd have to be continued on the next bill.
I give him props there. I mean, that's a good point, but I don't know. Slick, he's up in the years like we are, Chris.
Yeah.
So maybe he hasn't seen the new currency, but the new currency, those heads are monstrous.
They are massive.
I'm pretty sure if Ben Franklin is around, he'd be like, "Ooh, I don't even want to see my head that big." So I don't know how much bigger we can make them, but I'm pretty sure that Phil will be quite happy with the size of his head on the bill. But I could be wrong.
Plus, the other thing is Phil would insist on an $11 bill, so yes. You know, and he wouldn't want to be in any other bills, so we decided to just keep him off my list. That's how I did.
Hey, he probably should be on the $2 bill now with how many runner-ups he's getting.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Okay, well, speaking of that, let's see what's on the Anteup News Desk.
Through the first 30 of the 58 bracelet events this year, the World Series of Poker has seen an increase in attendance of 11.7%, and an increase in prize pools of 8.6%. What Black Friday, Chris? What Black Friday?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this on that Poker Wars show and some other places, and I never really thought that these would be affected. I thought the main event would be affected. So when the main event numbers come out, I'll be glued to my seat waiting for that email to land from Seth Polansky telling me that they've had more than 7,000 entrants. If that happens, I'll be ecstatic and be like,
color
wow.
Color suppressed.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah. But, you know, I just never thought that this makes sense, too, because a lot of the online guys can't play online, so now they're going to the World Series to play. So I'm not surprised by this. It's the main event I'll be surprised by, but we'll see.
Still happy for them, nonetheless.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Again, you always want the World Series to thrive because that means everyone else does. The California Online Poker Association, a group backed by the Morongo Band of Mission Indians, has chosen SciPlay and Playtech to operate its online poker site when and if online poker is regulated in the Golden State.
Getting their ducks in a row quite early.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that, right? Nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. I mean, it helps, too. You get a couple companies behind you. You're able to probably demonstrate to lawmakers how it's going to look and stuff. That helps a little bit rather than just this pie-in-the-sky Ross Perot flip charts.
Yeah, and it seems inevitable that this stuff's going to happen. I know a lot of people are probably wondering why we're not talking about Barton's bill yet because it really has been introduced and we're going to wait and stuff like that if that does happen and see what happens. So, but, you know, with that thing going and then the other online, the gambling bill and... So, yeah, it seems like it's inevitable that's going to happen, so why not get your companies in a row and get ready?
All right, finally, Chris, the Securities and Exchange Commission has suspended trading on three so-called penny stocks, including Core Nutrition, a Las Vegas area company that says it provides energy drinks at poker events.
Hmm.
Apparently, they're looking into some improprieties. You know, Chris, I think this company is going to make a go of it. They're going to come back. The company, according to documents, has only lost $13.4 million.
Uh-huh.
But the first quarter, they generated $888 in revenue.
Oh, no. You got to be kidding me.
So I just want you to know, when you see the second quarter ante up figures, I don't want you to be alarmed because we generated more than $888 in revenue, and we have not yet, despite my best efforts, lost $13.4
million. Well, that means the SEC won't be investigating us anytime soon either.
Core Nutrition. It sounds like they were hoping to line up some pro endorsements and even start their own poker tour and blah, blah, blah. I mean, how many people try to do that stuff? But interesting.
Well, that's what they get for spelling their name with a K. Hey, you know, you gotta spell stuff with a Z when it's a hard sounding S because make us cool. And if it's a C H sound, a hard sound, spell it with a K, even though it's supposed to be a C. So that you know, that they were doomed from the start.
Want to learn how to really make money at the World Series? Join Pro Poker Seminars with special guest Dr. Alan Schoonmaker in Vegas, June 27th through 29th. Small group intensive seminars on live sit-and-goes, cash games, and multi-table tournaments. Visit ProPokerSeminars.com and use bonus code ERIC50, that's ERIC50, to get $50 off the cash game or multi-table seminars.
All right, Black Friday and Black Monday have made it difficult, if not close to darn near impossible, Chris, to enjoy online poker for money here in the United States. So naturally, our email box has been filling up with questions from listeners wondering how best to make the transition from online play to live play. So we're going to take a stab here today at offering them some tips for those folks who have never left their home and that are now forced to go out and interact with humans.
Yeah, and you know, we did a show a while back, probably early at the times, even before they had the studio built, I think, on what it's like to... your first experience in a casino, you know, going there and how to buy chips and stuff like that. So, you know, it sounds mundane and pretty obvious if you've been listening to our show for the longest time or whatever, but if you've never played live, you should probably listen to that show as well just to get yourself familiar with, you know, exactly how things work in a casino. But we're gonna take it a little step further today and just get you what it's like to be inside the place, you know, and what it's like to be at the tables and things like that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it's going to be, I mean, the biggest adjustment, I think, and feel free to correct me as you often do, is not so much the actual playing of poker, though there's certainly a lot different there. It's just getting used to not playing in your PJs.
Right.
and around other people and the pace of the game. And it's just, you know, it's the same game, but it's a completely different game.
No, absolutely.
Playing live.
Absolutely. There's so many things to take into account. You know, I mean, especially, well, we're going to get into most of this stuff, but yeah, it is. It's just so different. Different pace, different feel, different sights, different sounds. I mean, it's totally different.
Well, I'll get us started here, and I think this is probably the overreaching, the best thing to keep in mind, and certainly the thing that we've been dealing with a lot of our emails, is you got to tamper down your expectations a little bit.
Right.
You know, so many of these online players walk into a brick-and-mortar room and expect it to, as odd as it sounds, expect it to replicate the online experience. And, you know, it's just not possible. It's not even close to possible. Now, there's certainly, I mean, I prefer to play live, so I'm a little skewed that way. There's a lot to like about playing live, but you just can't expect that same kind of thing that you were playing online. It's a different experience, and you can't expect the rooms to adjust to online. I mean, certainly the best rooms will be trying to do what they can to make it better for online players, but for the most part, you're going to have to meet them not only halfway, but maybe 75% of the way.
No, right. And, you know, the rooms that have, like, electronic tables, they might be able to replicate some of that feel, but really, with live dealers, you just... And that kind of situation with live chips and everything, it's just, you're just not going to be able to replicate that feel, and you're just going to have to adjust.
You know, a couple things to keep in mind. I mean, you got to pay dealer tokens, which you didn't have to online.
Right.
The rakes for tournaments and cash games will probably be a little bit higher. You're not going to get those 4,000 tournament fields on a daily basis. That's,
right.
That's not going to happen.
Right.
You're not going to have that selection of games or limits. And to be honest, some people, I think, are just going to find that they can't afford to play live.
Yeah.
If you are a penny, two-penny player or a $5 sit-and-go player, you're not going to find that. You're going to have to be willing to commit a little bit more money to play live or, you know, go to some of these the free poker leagues, which are great for those kind of players.
Yeah.
But to play live for money, you're going to have to – it's more expensive.
Yeah, and that's basically because you're paying for the floor man, you're paying for the company, you're paying for the manager, you're paying for the dealers, the waitresses. You know what I mean? A lot of this money, you know, they got to make the prize pool big enough for you to want to play in it, but they also have to take some money out of it for the rake to help actually run the poker room itself or the business. So, you know, that's something that you're going to have to, where you wouldn't have to pay as much online because all it is a computer program and a couple of people in administrative work and stuff. So, I mean, you know, in security. So, really, you're paying for the privilege to play live, really, and it's something you have to maybe save up for.
Yeah, it's absolutely a great point. I mean, you know, this is not just even tied to this issue, but, you know, a lot of the questions we get, what I want to say, if I was really rude to some of these players, is, hey, these poker rooms are businesses.
Yeah.
Just like when you go to work, you expect to be paid for what you do.
Yeah.
All right. So
yeah.
I don't know why you want to go into a business and demand that they operate it as a nonprofit.
Yeah.
And so it's a little odd to me that people, oh man, they don't care about me. They're greedy. They want. Well, no, they're not necessarily greedy. Some might be. But in general, they just got expenses to pay, just like you have expenses to pay at home. And the best they can do is try to provide you a good product at a fair price. But there is a price.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, you're going to have to make peace with that.
You know, a lot of times, too, when you're playing online, you know, it's an individual sport. So, you know, or game or contest or however you want to categorize poker. But... you know, you're home, but you're in the comfort of your home. So even if you are alone, you might have your spouse or your buddies or whatever next spot nearby, or whatever. But when you go to a casino, a lot of times you go alone. And the best thing to do is, if you're unfamiliar, is maybe take somebody who's actually been familiar with that, you're a friend, or even if they're not familiar with it, you can go through it together. You know what I mean? Bring somebody with you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the buddy system worked in elementary school, works for swimming in the ocean. It's great for live poker. I mean, don't feel like you have to go by yourself the first time in.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a friend that's been there, you know, say, hey, can I tag along with you next time you go? I mean, show me the ropes. You know, the hardest thing for poker players is leaving that pride at the door. You know, we all want to be proud, macho kind of people and not look like newbies. But, you know, you're just going to have to accept the fact that everybody has to learn somehow.
Yeah.
So if you get somebody that's been there before, that's great.
Exactly. You know, that's someone else to lean on or, you know, just take the pressure off of you. They'll even guide you or tell you, you know, if you're talking to somebody and he's saying, hey, that's where the brush is, there you go. Now you know what you're doing. And it's not like, you know, it's not like you're wandering around aimlessly asking questions. Someone can help you. But don't be afraid to ask questions either. That's the thing. If you are alone or even if you're not, one of the things that, you know, you're sitting at the table, whenever you're playing a tournament, a lot of times a dealer will turn to you and say, you know, does anybody need to hear the rules or whatever? And almost nobody says, yeah, I do, because they're all afraid to say it. But don't be, because a betting line could be decoration, you know, or whatever. And you need to know these things. And so, yeah, don't be afraid to ask questions like, you know, hey, dealer, can you read me the rules or other things?
Yeah, I mean, because you'll find, I mean, online, it's so regimented.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that you can't make a mistake. You can obviously misclick. People do that all the time. But, you know, you're never post to blinds incorrectly online.
Right.
It's done for you. You never have to worry about where the pot, well, I should say, depending what site you play on, you never have to worry about the push the wrong person or picking your chips over the betting line, like you say. I mean, all that stuff doesn't happen online. All that kind of stuff are perils of playing live, and you're going to make mistakes, but definitely, you know, ask and learn from them. And if you do make mistakes, too, I mean, this is just my personal opinion, you know, try not to be a jerk about it.
Yeah.
You know, just accept that, you know, you're going to make some mistakes and learn from them, and you don't make them the next time, you know. But, yeah, I can't tell you how many people kind of sheepishly walk into the room and just kind of learn by doing, which is great. But, you know, these poker rooms, I guarantee you the best poker rooms out there want these online players.
Sure, they're supposed to be expecting them, too.
Yeah, they absolutely want you in the room, and they want to try to do what they can within reason to make you happy. So they are going to... be more than willing to help you out if you walk in and say, hey, this is the first time I've been in a live room. Tell me what I need to know. A good room. Somebody in that room will tell you.
And you know, I've said it many times on this show before, the first live tournament I ever played in, I had my cards behind my chips because I was trying to protect them.
Yeah.
And the dealer turns to me and says, are you all in? And I says, no, why? Well, your cards are behind your chips. That means you're all in. It's a warning, so don't do it again. And I'm like, first of all, it's kind of silly now that you think about it because I didn't make a motion with the chips, so that's bull. But it's kind of a rule they had in that room at the time because they wanted to make sure people weren't angle shooting or something. So, yeah, I didn't ask. No, when I first sat down, I just started playing, didn't ask any questions like an idiot, and I could have lost all my stack right there on, like, 7-deuce offsuit. So... don't be afraid to ask questions, especially, you know, like I think you said, too, you know, ask somebody beforehand, you know, go to a foreperson and say, hey, you know, I'm kind of new, is there something I should know about the room or whatever, and then, you know, you'll feel that much more educated, and plus it'll make the experience better for you and for everybody around you, too. You won't feel intimidated by them because you know what you're doing, so please ask questions if you're not sure.
Yeah, and related to that is, you know, watch a little bit. I mean, you don't have to feel like when you get to the poker room that you got to jump right into the first game and play.
Right.
You know, and this is good advice even for experienced people. I mean, we get it all the time in Doc Bloomfield's columns. You know, walk around the room. You know, get a feel for it. You know, stand behind the table. I mean, just don't get it in the place where Chris Cosenza stands because he's very specific about where he likes to stand to watch games. But you know, watch a game and watch a few orbits, particularly at a game that you might want to play. And, you know, pay attention to the mechanics, listen for questions people ask or mistakes that other people make, etiquette kind of stuff, things that you just don't have to worry about online, and soak that up a little bit. When you feel confident, or more confident at least, you know, jump in the game. But take some time.
Yeah.
And, watch how it works.
And one of the things that you're going to have to let go of is any expectations that you're going to duplicate, like you said earlier, the online experience. You're not going to find... micro limits, you know, 1 cent, 2 cent limit, deuce of seven triple draw or something like that, or even like $5 sit and goes. It's just not going to happen. They can't run a business on that kind of money because what are they going to rake, you know?
Yeah.
So those limits are just not going to be out there. I mean, you're going to find some pretty cheaper limits now. I mean, we've had some reports now of rooms having a 25 cent, 50 cent, $20 max buy-in. game. So, I mean, some of them are trying it. You know, it depends on where you play and where you are. But for the most part, you know, the cheapest game you're going to find is probably a 1-1 game, if you're lucky, and probably 1-2. And it's going to be No Limit Hold'em, probably.
Right.
Don't hold out hope for, you know, any draw games or any stud 8 games or Raz. Although Raz is getting introduced to New Jersey now. It's going to start there. But not that they're going to play it. It's just going to be available if they want to play horse or whatever. And, you know, just be prepared to have your options narrowed significantly on buy-ins and, you know, limits and games.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking to play No Limit, you mentioned some rooms do a 1-1. I have actually heard some do 50 cent $1. But for the most part, you're looking at a minimum game of a 1-2.
Right.
You know, somewhere in the neighborhood of a $60 to $300 buy-in. And limit games almost always start a 2-4, though sometimes they're 1-2. So kind of keep those numbers in mind. I mean, that's kind of the price of entry in a live room. So if those limits scare you, you know, go to the bar leagues for a while and work up your confidence or save up your money before you dive in. But, you know, that's what you can understand. And then, you know, a lot of online players are tournament players. You know, you're not going to find those $5 multi-tables, $10 multi-tables. I mean, you're lucky if you'll be able to find a multi-table for $20.
No, I know. That does happen occasionally, but very rarely. I mean, it just depends on where you play. You know, some places are poker meccas, so they're not catering to people who are just starting how to play, while other places are like, all right, we're just happy and glad that we have a game, so we'll offer whatever we can, and some of them are offering $20 tournaments. So just depends. And do your research. Pick up your NEUP magazine and see what they're spreading on our Where to Play pages, too. You might find something there that you'll want to go to. So, you know, the other thing, too, is, I mean, you could do play, you know, the like you said, the bar leagues and stuff. But what do you suggest if they don't have a bar league in town? You know, because a lot of these places we don't have bar leagues, because otherwise they'd be in our magazine.
Right, yeah. Well, that's a good question.
I mean, I guess you could play online for play money, but that doesn't help you get to the live experience. So,
that's tough. You
start
know,
home game.
Yeah, the best thing I can suggest is, you know, if it's legal or at least you're playing low enough stakes that no one's going to raid you.
Yeah.
You know, try to get some buddies together, and if you don't know some buddies, you know, there's obviously, you know, post on our forum or 2+2 or places like that where you can probably find a home game. You know, or maybe you just start playing the travel, you know?
Yeah, travel, yeah.
Work those vacations around the poker destinations, you know, go have some fun with the family and the kids for a couple of days, and then stay away for a night or two and go play some cards. It's rough for those folks, and that's really the people that are hurt the most by this are people that don't have you know, a live option that's readily available.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I feel bad. You can't blame us. We certainly didn't do this.
No, we do our best
in the spare time.
Well, we mentioned a little bit before about rake and things like that, and there is a cost to playing live that's much more significant than online. You know, online you just paid a rake, and generally it was small. It was a smallish rake, and but live, you know, you're going to see, you know, a couple of bucks, maybe $1 or $2, depending on what state you play in and what area of the state you play in. But for the jackpot stuff, if they have a jackpot, unless you're playing like destination rooms, you know, like we mentioned with Las Vegas Michael, but for the most part, rooms take a dollar for jackpots so that they can have a bad beat or high hands or promotional things. So there's a dollar out of your pot right there. And of course, you're going to tip the dealer because, you know, you don't want to be accused of being a Chris Cosenza once in your life and never living it down for 6 years. I was bad information. I even asked a question. Whatever. So, so that, you know, you're going to have to pay a tip. And then on top of it too, there's a rake, and it's probably a bigger rake than usual. So all that money is coming out of your bankroll. So, you know, adjust to it. And tournament rakes are a little bit higher too, because I think we talked about that too. It's harder. You got all these dealers you have to pay a salary to, and all these floor people who have to run the tournaments, and, you know, and you're taking them out of the cash game rotation. So that means that you need more dealers to the cash games to make up for the dealers who are doing the tournament. So one way or the other, you got more staff there. So you got to pay more to have them deal the game for you. It's on a computer program, so just be prepared that you're not going to win as much playing live either as you would playing the same limits online.
Yeah, you know, one of the emails that made me my eyes roll a little bit were, hey, these rooms charge sky-high rates on their tournaments. Well, they don't really.
Right.
You know, you got to compare apples to apples. I mean, live poker is an apple, online poker is an orange. So you can't compare to the two, but, I mean, obviously you can compare two live casino rakes to each other, and you should, and one might be sky high. But, you know, again, it's just, as you mentioned before, there's a lot of extra stuff involved in running a live tournament rather than just, you know, bandwidth. So,
right.
You know, so don't necessarily go in there thinking that the rooms are, I'll just screw you! Because most of them are. They're just out to offer you a good product, a good price, and it's going to cost you a little bit more.
Yeah, and still, you know, they have to pay bills, you know, and they have to pay salary. So, you know, can't fault them for that.
Well, you know, people are probably getting more, hey, when are you going to tell me how to win?
Yeah.
I can figure all this other stuff out on my own, right?
Right.
So let's talk a little strategy, and this is the part I love the best about this. And I mean no disrespect to the makers of HUDs or poker tracking software or people who use them. I certainly understand why, and they're a valuable tool online. Here's the thing. I really hope you learned a lot from them. Because when you play live, you're on your own. You don't have these crutches that tell you the VP pipes and all this other stuff. You got to figure that out on your own now. So the value I thought in these thing in these software packages was getting you to understand the concepts and learning from them. My suspicion, though, is quite a few people who have used these didn't use it as a lesson, just use it as a crutch.
Yeah.
And now when you sit down in a live game, you're going to be lost.
Yeah.
So I'm just hoping that people did learn from it. And if you woke up and you're like, all right, Scott, you caught me. You're right. I got lazy. I didn't learn anything. I would suggest getting back into some of those play money games, using that stuff, and really learning from them rather than just using them. Because you're just going to get... Not that you're going to lose or you're going to get beat around necessarily in a live game, but you're going to feel like you're dropped into a forest where you've never been before.
Yeah.
And that's dissettling. I mean, you want to be... You want to be comfortable when you're playing.
The other thing that you can do to help, if you're a player that uses the notes programs, you know, yeah. Like, you know, you hit a note on a particular player or you highlighted them yellow or green or whatever, one of the things you can do is always have your smartphone with you, your PDA, whatever you want to call it, and take notes to table.
That's true.
In between yeah. hands, and then you'll always have that. So that way it makes the transition a little easier. You have notes. I mean, you can even use a pad if you wanted to. There's nothing wrong with writing down notes in between hands mm-hmm. or whatever. But yeah, and you can review that and try to commit it to memory in between breaks or whatever. And the other thing you could do is now that you have to start paying attention to these human beings that are sitting around you, is you can actually download like Joe Navarro's 200 poker tells into your phone
right.
and refer to that, you know, if you're picking up somebody that's doing something off their baseline. You know, in other words, you know, you've watched this guy all day shake his leg, but now all of a sudden he's not shaking his leg, so maybe I'll look that up on Navarro's 200 tells or whatever. So, you know, that's another thing that you could do to make the transition a little bit smoother is if you like to rely on, you know, data or something, that's something else you could put in your phone and just make sure you ask too about how can you look at your phone during poker? Can you not? You know, they yeah. have rules too, so make sure you ask about that as well. But that's something that can help with the transition and your strategy is, you know, learning the baselines of these people and then comparing the tells to what Navarro has in his book.
Yeah, I really appreciate the fact you brought up the tells because that's a huge difference. I mean, online, your tells are betting patterns for the most part.
Yeah.
And whatever you can read between the lines of the crazy chat box chat. You know, live, I mean, it's an open book. I mean, there's so much more information that you can get from players beyond the betting thing. And obviously a lot more information that you're giving away.
Yep,
you don't
that's
think
the
about
thing.
Online,
yep.
So
yep.
you need to take that into account, and definitely, I highly encourage reading all of Navarro's books and learning them. Not so much from the point of view of studying your opponents initially, but understanding how your opponents are studying you.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're not used to playing live, you know how some of the involuntary and voluntary things that you do make you an open book.
Now, don't expect to see the unbelievable tell from the ESPN Tilt series of the guy, the kid, pushing his finger against the rail rapidly yeah. as if he was wanting to hit raise on his mouse. How ridiculous is that? But pay attention, because you would be surprised how many arching eyebrows and people turning away from the flop because they've hit it so hard. That, yeah, you'd be surprised how many tells you'll see if you pay attention, and how many you're giving off, too. So be a rock at the table.
Right, right, absolutely. In terms of games, I mean, and how the games play, expect the games to play a little smaller. I mean, I think the rule of thumb online is, you know, games always play bigger. Because they're more aggressive, people are playing more. So, I mean, it's kind of weird to think of it in reverse, but I think that's what you have to do. So, you know, I didn't play a lot of live online, but I'm kind of guessing from when I talk to people, and I'm interested in what you think too, Chris. I kind of equate maybe like 25-cent, 50-cent no-limit level to about a 1-2 live level.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. You know, I remember... a long time ago, we got an email from a guy who said that he used to equate the 1-cent, 2-cent game to the $1, $2 game. And then, I was like, well, that seems a little drastic. But really, if you're playing the cheapest level you can in a casino and you're playing the cheapest level you can in a car in an online room, those are the two limits.
So that does make sense.
So yeah. I don't know if it's true or not. I don't think the type of 1-2 player that I'd find online for 1-cent, 2-cent, I mean, would be the same player I'd find live. But, you know, there are a lot of people when you play 1-2, there are people you would think, yeah, that player would play 1-2 cent, you know, 1 cent, 2 cent. So I really don't know. I don't know if I could equate it. I did play a lot more cash online than you did. I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think people who are playing maybe 10 cent, 25 cent are probably the typical 1-2 guy. Maybe, you know, and maybe it's just semantics here. I do feel that 25, 50 cent was my bread and butter when I played. That was where I really made my most money. When I made money, and maybe that's where I make my money playing live. I'm not real comfortable playing 5-10 when I play no limit. So, you know, 1-2 or 2-5, I'll play. But that's just me. That's how I play, and I'm not a great player. So, you know, yeah, it's hard to really do an equation, but yeah, it's definitely play smaller. A 1-2 game live is way easier than a 1-2 online game, or it was. And we know what the other thing too, Scott, is we probably will never know now. Because when online poker finally does get regulated and come back, we'll probably get all of the people back from the early days of online poker who were worried when the UIGA happened in 2006. So then we're going to get a bunch of fish back, without sounding negative there.
Right.
But we're going to get a lot of people who are, you know, are just experimenting, having fun. And so now we're never really going to know. Because, you know, that game was tough, really tough when everybody got weeded out. But when it wasn't that way, I was making money hand over fist in a 1-2 no limit online. So we'll never know, I think. I think we'll never really know.
Yeah. Well, from the limit standpoint, because I did, when I played cash online, it was mostly limit. I know like a 2-4 limit game really is more equatable to even bigger than a 4-8 game live, probably like a 5-10, 6-12 kind of game. So that I feel a little more confident in saying. But certainly, it's much higher. So, you know, if you were so I guess the opposite is if you're playing, you know, 2-4 online limit, don't go to a casino and play 2-4 live. You're going to be bored and probably lose. You know,
right.
Feel free to bump a little bit. I guess that's the other way of looking at it. And same way with no limit. So.
Yeah, because, you know, 2-4 is usually the lowest limit they'll offer. So you're going to find the worst players possible there. Which is fine, but they're never going to fold either because it's only $2 to $4 to them. It may be a significant increase to your bankroll, you know, but you know your limits. But to them, they can't fold for $4 on the end. You know what I mean? So yeah, you're absolutely right. You should play higher if you're playing 2-4. Don't play what you're playing online live if you can play
that.
That's
the best. Yes, there you go.
Play
very
higher.
Good advice. Yeah. and then don't be surprised to see a lot of players like yourself at the tables. I mean, there's a whole group of people who are shut out of poker now, at least the poker they wanted to play.
Right.
Not all of them are going to be brave enough like you are to go into a live room and play. I mean, some are going to give up the game. Some will play home games or something like that. But there are going to be other people in there, so don't feel that you're the only one sitting at the table that's new to this or is used to playing online or playing live. I mean, what I think is going to be interesting, and it's really too early to tell, is how the live game changes now.
Yeah.
I mean, how many of the online people are going to become comfortable playing live and playing regularly, and will they alter how the game is played? I think it's probably going to take 6 months, a year before you actually see that. But for right now, you might actually find yourself at a table with a bunch of other people that have never been there before.
And I do wonder how many converts we'll get Whereas, you know, when online does come back, will they continue to go back to live playing because they enjoyed it now and they realize they could probably make more money that way? Or will they go back to online when online finally gets regulated? I wonder what will happen then, too. But really, you know, you're not alone out there if you're the first person, you know, sitting down at a table. You're not the only one who's coming in from only playing online. They're everywhere. So, you know, you're not going to have signs on their heads, but you'll know.
Right. And then, of course, this goes without saying, but, I mean, if it went without saying, we wouldn't say it, right? the live game is so much more slow.
Yeah.
You know, online, everything is faster.
Yeah.
You know, you got shorter clocks, you're clicking and you're moving, you go multi-table. When you're playing live, you're at one table, you got a dealer that's shuffling, you got people that are thinking about their hands. It's almost like driving a Ferrari for your entire life and then getting a rickshaw.
Yeah.
And so you have to learn to adjust that. I mean, you can't force people to go with the online speed.
It's more than half slow.
Okay. Yeah.
In other words, you're used to getting about 70 to 100 hands live an hour online. And when you're playing live, the national average is like 32.
Yeah.
And that's the average. So you could actually sit down at a table where they're dealing you 20 hands an hour.
Yeah.
And that's just it's one hand every, you know, 3 minutes. And it's hard to adjust to. And some of the things that you could do is you could proof pages of the NEUP magazine.
Works well for me.
But really, you know, that's the time that you should be taking to study your opponents.
Yeah.
You know, if you're folding, you're not done. Okay, you're not in the hand, but you should be in the hand and pay attention. You know, don't be betting the dogs and watching the races or seeing if, you know, Oprah's going to retire yet again. You know, no, just pay attention to the people at the table. Pay attention to their betting patterns, their movements, their whatever, you know, or study your notes or take that time to write your notes about the players and read those notes and ingrain it in your head. Something to keep you occupied in your attention span. If you have like ADD, you know, it's going to be hard. And you're going to need to really focus. And that's something you can focus on is what kind of hands these people, especially if they go to showdown.
Right.
These people go to showdown, study what they played and how they played it and really commit that to your repertoire and your arsenal or whatever. So that's one of the ways to – it really is so slow. And, you know, I tend to forget that. You know, when we were playing Apes basically four times a month and, you know, playing on the weekends or something and – you know, then you sit down because you went on a road trip or something. You sit down at the table. You're like, "Oh my God, I forgot about this." You know, you tend to forget it is slow. I mean, and some are fast. I mean, some dealers will get you 40 hands an hour if they're really good, and that's pretty acceptable. And or as far as online transition, so yeah, find something to do at the table, and it should be to make your bankroll bigger. So focus on the other players.
Yeah, you're totally. That's the best advice is to focus on the players. I know some people would probably just. Don't want to do that or can't do it, but I mean, you got to occupy your time somehow. You know, bring a poker book and read it or something.
Yeah.
You know? Because if you sit there and you don't bring anything, you're going to get frustrated. You're going to get antsy, and you're going to start playing bad poker.
Yep.
You know, absolutely. And that's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
So. And I guess the final considerations we mentioned: you're not on your couch in your PJs.
Right.
So one, you got to put clothes on. So that's a good thing to keep.
Please put clothes on.
But just generally think about it. I mean, think about it's like watching the football game on your couch and then going to the stadium.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a lot the same ways. I mean, think about what it means not to be at home and not be able to run to the fridge and get a drink every minute. Not be able to take the laptop with you to the can.
Yeah,
and be able to continue. But not being able to turn the thermostat up or down to you know, whatever temperature you want at that point. All that kind of stuff, I mean, you lose some control. So, you know, do what you can to keep control. You know, take a backpack, you know, pack a jacket in case it gets cold or change, you know, something that, you know, you could take off, you know, pack some snacks or water and stuff like that.
Yeah, just think like the Boy Scouts, you know, be prepared.
Oh, I like it. Very good.
Be prepared.
You know, I was talking to my brother today. He's dropping my niece off at Girl Scout Day Camp.
Uh-huh.
Did you know this, Chris? They do not make them make cookies at Girl Scout Day Camp.
Well, where do those cookies come from, then? I thought that's where they did it.
Truly inefficient thing these Girl Scouts are running. I mean, this is a multi-billion-dollar operation every year, They get me to buy like 7 boxes of these overpriced cookies every year. And they should be employing this child labor.
Yes, it should be a little kiddie sweatshop making these cookies.
They don't need to pay these girls. They give them badges and patches and stuff like that. So they're clear, completely in the clear of putting them in the kitchen and making them make cookies all year. But no, they farm that out to somebody. Give me just 1 week at the Girl Scouts. I'll turn them into a moneymaker.
How do they not have slave labor? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, speaking of slave labor, the best thing about the one thing to keep in mind is you actually have to interact with humans.
Yeah.
In a live arena, you know, online. So I mean, the big thing is, if you're one of these people, and I hope you're not, that just bangs the keyboard with these absolutely beyond belief rude missives, and you type them into the protected sanctum of the online chat box. Guess what? If you say that same thing out in live room, you might get clocked and find out you're laying on the floor, you
know? Or at least a penalty.
You have to go back and be a real human, a real person when you're playing there. You can't be this jerk face that you were online. Or at least, you know, you can be if you want to be. Just understand the consequences.
Yeah, you're going to get slapped or slapped with a penalty, one or the other. So.
Yeah, and you're also going to have to, I mean, beyond that, you're going to have to just, like I said, deal with humans. So you're going to sit next to the guy that hasn't showered in 3 weeks. You're going to sit next to the guy that just went out and sucked down an entire box of marbles in his 5-minute break. You're going to sit next to the guy that just can't shut up about talking about how Obama is ruining the country. You know, this stuff is going to happen, and you're going to have to adjust to the fact that you're dealing with people. So people just aren't a people person. That's why they like the online.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why a lot of people won't go and play live. They'll just stop playing online because they just don't want to. So if you're going to do it, there are people you're going to have to put up with, and you're going to have to watch your tongue and watch your actions.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
This is Downtown Chad Brown, and I'm in the studio with Auntie Up.
Ah, Chris, I can't believe this. You know, Poker Geek Man, you know him, right?
I think I do. I'm familiar with the man.
He has been with us for quite a while, listener. Been doing all kinds of great stuff in the background, created all those apes websites for us, kept the points and everything. Now he's our Minnesota ambassador.
Yeah.
And he has never received swag from us, Chris.
That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. So we are rectifying that problem today by choosing his hand as Hand of the Week and giving him his rightful swag.
Very cool.
And hope he's not upset that he's done all his work for us and all we've given him was a lame shirt for being an ambassador.
Hey, it's not lame.
All right. And what I like about this, too, is I mentioned he's our Minnesota ambassador, right?
Yeah.
Minnesota, like a lot of states, have weird laws.
Right.
And in Minnesota, they have a $60 max bet. All right. So it's not truly no limit hold'em up there. It's like a $2 to $60 spread limit game, as he describes it.
That's pretty cool.
All right, so you can bet anywhere from $2 to $60 at any point. So it's like no limit on training wheels.
Now, here's the thing that makes it so ridiculously stupid, you know, the state, just like we had to deal with here in Florida. Hey, you can bet up to $60 on any street, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so now if it gets to me and I want to raise him, I'm now betting $120 on my street because it's not capped at 60 to me. It's 60 to me, but I can raise 60 more. So that means I can make it 120, which means now my bet isn't 60, it's 120. And then when it gets to the next guy, he can make it 180.
Well, that's true.
Right? So
there's no limit on how much money that can make it into the pot.
Yeah, it's so stupid. A $60 max bet on any one street bet if you're the first person to make the bet. I mean, it's so stupid. Just pass no limit and be done with it. Okay, there's my rant for the day. Sorry.
Yeah.
But right? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but you know, we've toiled here in Florida, so we know all about ridiculous lawmaking.
We do.
All right, so it's an interesting, it throws a little wrinkle into the normal No Limit Live hand, right?
Okay.
And I'll be interested to see whether that comes into play, but I would think there's some people that learn how to play the strategy, knowing that there's a $60 cap per bet.
Yeah.
All right, well, he says he's had a good session, Chris, and he's racking up his chips as he waits for his big blind before I go home. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh, you never like that.
Yeah, we know where that always ends up. All right, pre-flop action. There are two limpers in early position, and our hero here is in the hijack position, looks down at not one, but two black kings.
Nice. All right.
60.
We had a couple of limpers, right? So
it's like pot limit. One, you got to bet the max all the time, right?
I'll raise to like 12 or 15.
Well, we're 15. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to know what the standard raise has been here, too. We got two people already in. I mean, in some places, $12 for two limpers is too little. And in some places, it's just right. So, but yeah, I think that's about right.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Because I said it.
Like 15. 20 if I'm feeling frisky.
Yeah, I don't know about 20. But yeah, okay, 15 sounds about right. 12, yeah. 15.
Well, again, we don't know the action. There is just the 12.
So you raise to 12, okay.
Yep. Folds to the small blind, who raises to 32 and has $150 behind. He says the small blind has been a fairly solid player, so he is going to give him credit for a pretty good hand here.
Hmm.
The big blind makes a max raise to 92 and has more than $160 behind. He says this player has been an aggressive player, has stolen a couple pots from our hero with a worst hand. His raise could be a good hand, a speculative hand, or just trying to steal the $32 from the small blind who's played fairly tight. He seems to like to steal hands on the turn often. The limpers fold, and it's back to us.
Well, I'm re-raising again. I mean, the only hand I'm afraid of is aces, and this guy has been known to be very aggressive, so the range opens up wide. And only one hand beats me, and I'm doing well, so I'll make it to max. What did he make it? 92, so 152.
152.
I'd make it 152.
You know, I wonder if they have like a little scoreboard behind. I'll let you know. It's counted up, and all right. So you know, it's gonna be 152 now.
That's cool.
I wonder if they have $60 chips.
Oh wow, I doubt it. But that'd be pretty
funny. Would that
be great? Yeah.
Hmm. Guess we'll have to find out. Yeah, I'm kind of reading into some of the comments here, which is always a danger, you know, because when you're sitting at the table, no one's got these little comments.
Yeah.
But the person's already played the hand and going back and writes these comments. So it really does seem to me like the big blind is like, ooh, there's some money in this pot.
Yeah.
Let me raise and then try to take it down. If not, I'll squeeze out probably the small blind, who probably has the best hand. And if I'm left heads up, I'm heads up with somebody with a little weaker hand.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm going to pop the max, right? Not?
Yeah, 152.
Only one hand beats us. You're right. All right, well, that's exactly what our hero does. Raises 152. He says he expects the small blind to fold, but if he doesn't, I'm in trouble. But I expect the big blind to call no matter what.
Okay. Well,
got the same read that we do.
Yeah, that's about right.
All right, the small blind thinks long, but folds. Big blind calls fairly quickly, leaving him with just over a 100 behind.
Oh, man.
I have a feeling right now that all of our money's getting in here, right?
Yeah, probably.
Unless an ace comes,
yeah.
But even then, maybe. All right, the flop is the 9 of spades, 7 of spades, 4 of spades. And the big blind quickly checks.
All right, 9 of spades, 7 of spades, 4 of spades, big blind quickly checks.
And we have two black kings.
We have to bet the max, because the pot's huge, and we can only bet 60 anyway. So, I'm betting the max. I mean, here's the thing. We had the King of Spades, which means that only one card beats us if the flush gets there. And, you know, this guy has a set, more power to him, but we have outs. So, yeah. I'm betting the max here. There's no way I'm not betting the max after I re-popped it. You know, I raised it twice, essentially, yeah. On the last hand, or last action, I mean. So, yeah, there's no question here. I'm betting 60. I don't know what else I could do.
Right. And you know what? This is interesting, and I'm going to probably take some time on the plane when I have my big thoughts and think about this. I mean, this is a game where, I mean, no one wants to be limited in which you can bet in No Limit, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that they have this cap in some way, I think, helps protect players a little bit. I mean, think about here. This is a situation. You got three spades. Obviously, we have the king of spades. But let's say we both had 1,000 in front of us.
Yeah.
You know, the $60 kind of helps a little bit if you're trying to figure out what the bet is. I mean, here we know we can only go to 60, so you almost have to bet 60 here. Whereas if you didn't have the cap, then you might have to come up with a better bet, and then, you know, the most he can raise you now here is 60.
The funny thing is, and not to interrupt you, but it's almost like you're playing a 30-60 limit game now at this point, because who's going to bet less than 60? And if he raises, he can only raise 60, and it's like on the turn already betting the 60-60. So, yeah, it's kind of funny. It's like a limit game now.
Very interesting. All right, well, our hero does bet the 60, and he says his thinking is that he has a redraw to the second nut flush if I'm already beat, and will likely have a better flush draw than him if he's drawing. And, of course, we got those two kings.
Yeah.
To help us out. Big blind quickly calls, leaving him with $43 behind. The turn is the four of diamonds. Our hero says he figures the four was unlikely to change anything.
Right.
Because our board now is nine of spades, seven of spades, four of spades, four diamonds. I guess what it could change is if our opponent was sitting on a set of nines or sevens, our flush is gone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't change. Not unlikely to change anything, but.
Right.
The big blind checks to us.
Well, you know, he's only got $43.
Yeah.
And the pot's massive, and we weren't going to bet less than 43, so I just put them all in.
All right, well, we do bet the 60, which is obviously more than he needs, but I like that. I always like betting more.
Yeah, always bet more.
Looks more intimidating. Maybe you get the stupid players to fold. So the big blind thinks for a while and folds.
Hmm.
All right, now our hero, Poker Geek, is shocked by the fold because there is 500 in the pot, 496 after the rake and jackpot. He's getting 11.5-1 on his money. You know, unless he's drawing dead, he has to see the river. What do you think about that?
Oh, my God. Yeah, because 11.5-1, if he has pocket aces and he thinks he's beat at this time with a flush, he could still hit the flush. And if he's beat by a set, he could still hit his two-outer, which is roughly what you need. I guess it's,
yeah. I mean, probably it's more money than that, but. Yeah. But then you're just figuring that, I mean, at that point, you're really putting your opponent on the flush.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a wider range of hands that you're putting him on, so obviously the flush would suck.
Yeah.
But you're right. I don't see how he could be drawing dead at all here, right? If he has pocket aces. Now, I don't know what obviously, he could have a wide range of hands.
With the ace of spades. Make that understood, though. With the ace of spades. Right. If he has pocket aces, he's drawing dead. But if he has, he could be drawing dead. But
he could still hit a boat, right?
Yeah, that's right. He still has two outer. Yeah, the boat. Yeah. So, unless he's up against quads.
Of course, assuming he has aces. Now, I mean, you could have a bunch of crap, at which point then a fold probably would make sense. But
unless he's against quad fours, there's no hand he can't beat on the river with one of his aces. So, I can't imagine. Why would you put 120, whatever it is, in the pot, and back-to-back streets, the first street, and then this? Yeah, so he put 152 in and then 60. So you put $212 in or whatever into this pot and then fold for 40 with, you know what I mean? What could he have had? He had to have had what do you think, like an ace king maybe? I know, even that. I can't even imagine what he would have. I don't know
what seems odd to me about this here is it's not the river where he folds. At that point, I mean, if you're on a flush draw, you didn't get there, you know, you're dead. It's on the turn, so we still have one card to come. And what kind of hand would he quickly check the flop and then check the turn and call, by the way, I mean, quickly check the flop and call and then check the turn.
It sounds like it's an overpair that's under our kings, and he just realized that he was convinced that he couldn't win, or that, you know.
Well, that's a great laydown on his part.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, what else could it be?
$43 left. I mean, I'm not that I like to throw money away, but, I mean, it would be tough for me to throw away almost any pair here.
Right.
But certainly jacks, queens, tens for $43 left. It's different if I had a bigger stack, obviously. But
yeah, I mean, I can't imagine this guy throwing away anything that's a made hand. But he... You know, I mean, but I can't imagine him calling with
it. I mean, yeah.
Well, another thing is that if he doesn't have a made hand, then what hand would he possibly have re-raised with and then called the flop bet with? You know, unless he was floating the steal on the turn, hoping you would check the turn. And even then, with $43, he's not going to get you to fold. So I can't imagine what his hand is then. You know, if it's not a made hand, what hand is it? So it has to be something like tens through queens, I think. Otherwise, he's not doing it with ace-king here. You know, and if he had the ace of spades or the king of spades, he's calling because he's got the odds to make his flush on the end. So I don't... not the ace, you know, ace of spades, or you know what I mean. But I don't know what hand it possibly is that's not a made hand here for him to call that flop bet and then fold on the turn, because he knows you're not folding for $43 on the turn, so he's not floating you.
Right.
I don't know what that hand is. It has to be something like jacks to me. That's what it feels like. And he just laid it down because he was convinced he was beat, and for a two outer, maybe it's not worth it if he had two red jacks or something. You know, I don't know. I can't. I'm hoping we know what the hand is, because I have no idea.
I'm supposing the other thing too is this guy saw an opportunity to steal some money pre-flop. It didn't go the way he thought. He got called. Then the flop came. Other than the spades, which obviously are scary, you know, it's a pretty milquetoast flop there. And then just probably lost track of his stack.
Yeah, that could be
when he made that call, and then looked down. I'm like, oh shoot! Now I got $43 left. This is stupid.
Yeah, because if he had an overpair, that's the thing that blows the overpair theory out for me too. If he did have jacks, he probably puts the other 43 in with it, right? Because you know what I mean, on the flop, and then he's putting all in 103, and then we just call and find out what he has. And that's the only thing that makes me think maybe he didn't have that. Maybe he had eights or something. But other than that, it feels so much like jacks or queens. Oh, but again, he is this overly aggressive player, so you can't even put him on that either. Wow, it's a tough hand now to figure out.
Well, our hero obviously wins the pot. He pushes his cards towards the muck. The small blind, who folded preflop, begs him to show his hand. Chris, do you show your hand?
Do I show my hand?
Yes.
When somebody begs, I don't show it.
ask professionally,
if somebody's just like, if somebody else at the table is like, show a bluff, or I don't know, maybe I would show it, but in this case, the guy's like, please, please, then I definitely don't show it, because I don't want to give him anything, you know? Because if they don't say anything at all, sometimes I show it, just because, you know, I want a certain image and I know I'm leaving. Who cares? So, if he's begging me, no, I'm not showing it.
All right, well, our hero says he almost never shows a hand, but given that he's racking up his chips and only has a couple hands left, he decided to instruct the dealer to flip over his hand. Much to his surprise, Chris, he has two red kings.
What?
Not black kings.
What? How do you not know what kind of kings you have?
Well, I want to know is, how did he pass the Antiope Ambassador eye test?
That's because you can't see red, right, when you have the eye test. That's
he
the
must
whole
have
point.
Been in a home game when someone said, hey, I've got glasses in the car that will help you win that or pass that test tomorrow. And they got in a big fight, and it worked out.
See, now you're hoping that everyone listened to our show last week. That's not fair.
It's a bonus for those who did.
Yeah, you're rewarding those who are loyal.
But yeah, wow. You know, your mind can do weird tricks to you, but that's tough to think that you had
two black
kings instead of red.
So
he wants to know now, should he have played the hand differently had he known this?
Well, first, get your vision checked, because you're probably colorblind. But you know what? I don't think so. I don't think I play it differently, because the odds of them flopping a flush are so remote,
right,
that I'm just protecting my hand anyway. So I don't think so. I don't think I play it any differently. I mean, it was nice knowing you had that as a backup and so you could be confident betting your $60. But really, we would have made it 152 to go pre-flop anyway, and there's no way we're not getting $103 in there. No matter what the flop is, unless it's aces, maybe an ace gets you away from it. But, you know, since it's capped at $60, there's no way you're not going to get $103 in this pot anyway. So I don't think you do play it differently.
Just can't not bet that flop.
And right.
If you're
going to
bet, you might as well. With that, the size of the pot, you got to bet the 60, and then it leaves you 43. I mean, it's a sick way of looking at it that you got to put 103 in. But, I mean, you got a pocket king, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
What I think is interesting, though, is that it just proves that you need to play the player, not the cards. And this gave this mistake he made gave him the confidence to play the hand the way it should have been.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's asking whether he should have played it differently leads me to believe that he might have played it differently. He might have played it differently, and he shouldn't have. So it would be interesting to me that it just shows that you shouldn't get fixated necessarily on the cards you have. You got to play the situation.
And who are we really when you consider that Webster's unit of measurements would equate poker MN success with a bunch of bananas, whereas you and I have zero. So who are we really to tell him how to play it anyway? But we tried our best. So what does he win? I'm dying to know his first swag.
All right. Well, he said he had always had an eye out for anything J Design. And you know what? Here's the thing. If you can't read the cards, I don't think you really should be honored with a deck of cards that you're not going to be able to properly use, right?
Oh, that's so harsh.
It is, but you know, hey, there's tough lessons out there, and I'm just the tough lesson guy to give them. No. So I think Poker Geek is going to be just as happy with the t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com. And the owner, Robin McCarty, is going to be on Vegas next week, too. We'll see whether we can talk her into coming to the meetup. Maybe she can bring some swag as well, too.
Well,
we'll have a swag off.
You know, in the beginning of this segment, you said all we did was give him a shirt. Now you're giving him another shirt. But I don't think he's going to be happy about that.
This is a different shirt. This is going to be a shirt that says, "My kings were red."
Well, you know what else, too? If he doesn't,
it was black.
If he doesn't, like the free gift, he can ask for a refund. Hey, Geek, thanks for sending that hand in, and we really appreciate all your efforts and everything you've done for us. My phone's ringing off the hook, so I'm going to go. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.